Welcome to On Digital Media. I'm your host and executive producer, John Federico, which means that I am the herder of cats. And joining me tonight, I was able to wrangle a couple of cats. First of all, I should point out, it's going to be an all audio version. So my references to people's positioning is really just for our benefit, not for yours. Sorry about that, kids, but all audio it is today. So joining from across town is Mr. Craig Calder.
Greetings and salutations.
Thank you for joining us, sir. And from across the country is Ms. Shailen Simmons.
Hey, everyone.
And through the power of video conferencing, it's like we're all in the same room, except we can't share the wine.
Such a shame.
Such a shame. I know. So it's been a few weeks since we've done a show. Why is that? Well, lots of stuff. What's going on? I'm busy with my company. We're rebranding this month. Don't tell anyone. We're rebranding this month. We're raising a round of financing, and that's just hell, but it's all good. Can I say? The process is just astounding. And, you know, what have you guys been up to? Obviously, new job, Shailen, and Craig's been heads down on a bunch of projects. What are you guys up to?
Craig.
I'm getting ready for a big launch, doing a big project, getting ready to launch 27 websites for a client along with 27 paid search plans. So lots of moving parts.
Only 27. Okay.
And that's just the first phase. And then there's a few more.
Awesome. That's crazy. Yeah. So we've all been a little busy. Have pushed the show for various reasons. But we're back, and we're glad you're with us. So let's get started. So it's been a few weeks since we've gotten together to talk shop, but we're not going to go that far back. We're still going to keep it with recent news from this week, starting with the usual. Has to be, right? Apple event, September 9th. It has not been confirmed. I haven't seen the pretty invitations emailed out to journalists yet. But according to Recode, it is all but confirmed that September 9th will be an iPhone event. What are we expecting?
Well, let me just say that I'm hoping that we have moved up in status as journalists and perhaps we'll get one of these pretty invitations. But sadly, I don't think that a pretty invitation is in our mailbox ready to go. So we can only speculate that maybe an iPhone is coming.
I would imagine it is that time of year, though I would say possibly an iPad as well, maybe an iPod Touch. You don't know. We really don't know. But the one thing we've seen, of course, just to add to the rumors, oh, I think everyone knows it's coming at this point, is at least one larger phone, maybe even two. That seems like a very un-Apple thing to do.
Or they're coming in phases.
Or they're coming in phases, yeah. They've done that on occasion, right? But they don't always announce the products ahead of time, so they may have one. But see, I don't see that happening. I see them – when you say phases, you mean year over year?
No, I hear they're going to announce both sizes, and then you're going to be able to get the smaller size immediately and then the larger size.
Before the holiday. It's got to be before the holiday.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's possible. I could see them doing that, sure. I don't know. This is something.
This is why I don't think a new iPad is coming. That I think that, you know, evolution into a phablet will be sort of the big, you know, opportunity and that introduction into that sort of mid-size experience or larger size phone experience is more than enough. And, you know, they've just launched a recent iPad, right? So, I mean, it doesn't seem like that's the right time for it. I actually would speculate that I'd like to see something like a wearable come through.
Well, what was the comment? In the Recode article, they snatched a comment from the Code conference, whatever their conference is called these days. It used to be for those who are listening, the people at Recode used to be the folks at All Things D, and they basically moved wholesale to a new media property. And one of the things that they mentioned at this year's conference is that Eddie Q, who claimed that he has not seen a fall product lineup this good in his 25 years at Apple. that's a, I mean, all right, Apple is known for its hyperbole, right? But
yep.
That's a pretty strong statement.
Very strong.
Especially when it's supposed to be an off the record statement. I mean, that's that. So Shailene, you may get your wearable.
I'm looking for it. I'm dying to see it. So,
whether it's not going to work with your phablet though.
So you're thinking the wearable is going to be the iWatch.
Who knows?
You know, they're working on something. It's going to be a new category, according to comments that have been made by Tim Cook himself. I don't know. It's really got to be something groundbreaking for Apple to release it. I don't see them being a follower here unless it can be a total departure from what we all expect from, let's say, a smartwatch, right? You guys know I've owned two smartwatches. I owned the Pebble, and I own – I can't think of the other one now. It doesn't really matter. Either way, they were both not a very good experience. And, you know, even now, like HP said that they're working on a smartwatch with Gilt and some designer that's going to be this high-end – you know, expensive, but not necessarily feature-rich smartwatch. Why? Like, I don't know. I find the whole thing...
That's not fair. Because I think in many ways, it's sort of, you know, look at who we're talking with here. There's three of us. We're totally tech geeks. You're probably the biggest one of us all. You're the first to basically go out and buy the Pebble and, you know, all of the coolest devices. But from a mass audience perspective, these things don't look like a piece of jewelry. And if Beats taught us anything, is that these things need to be fashionable now. They can't just be, you know, a product crammed full of really cool technology, but look like crap, you know?
Well, I'll agree with that. But both my watches looked cool. They were sport watches, though. That's for certain. Yes, they were not high end. It's not the kind of thing I would put on when I got dressed for a meeting or something. But yeah, they were nice enough. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not gonna. Well, again, you know, the best product lineup in 25 years. So, okay, phones, a phone, and possibly an iWatch,
or wearable,
or some other wearable.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I mean, the other thing that they're talking about is mobile wallet, but that doesn't get anybody excited.
It gets investors excited.
Mm-hmm.
It gets partners excited. It gets developers excited. So, but they wouldn't announce. But actually, to your point, they would announce something like that at WWDC in June, right? If they were gonna have payments.
True.
Unless it's tied to the hardware, right? So unless it's like a Touch ID thing, where now you've got Touch ID in multiple devices, not just the 5S. And suddenly it does open up payments. So, yeah, I guess now that you have the hardware that can adequately support the infrastructure, maybe they would. So maybe they would, Craig. Yeah, that's good thinking.
But don't they already have a wallet product, or is that Google has the wallet product? So maybe I'm getting confused.
Yeah, Google has a wallet product. And they made a push to use it in real-world situations, but in general, it hasn't really taken off. But again, the reason it hasn't taken off, it goes back to the hardware and the usage. It never took off because it relied on NFC, right? Yeah. NFC, for those listening, near field communication, it's a flavor of RFID. And so, you know, they had these tap targets that you could use, like, for instance, in the subway and New Jersey Transit, of all places. But no one had the devices. So... Apple may change that, and yeah, they may roll out something like a Bluetooth payment system, Bluetooth iBeacon based payment system. All right, moving on. Why Apple could break up with Intel over the Mac? Craig, why could Apple break up with Intel?
It's just because of the performance of the Intel chips are not just keeping up with the. With the Mac, and I think it's, you know, the article is actually written by Jean-Louis Gasset, who was always saying that he was never a big fan of the Intel chips. So
All right, so this is like really hardcore nerdy stuff, though. So what would they move to? The ARM chips are very power efficient, but I don't know. I don't see me running my Mac on them. I don't see doing video and audio editing and all the other stuff I have to do with it. They're not really designed for that.
Yeah, but I think they're probably thinking of the next generation of Macs, right? And I think what they're saying is that the Mac line is suspended because they're waiting on Intel chips right now. And as a company, they can't afford to be held hostage.
Yeah, that's been the case. Well, I don't know. I mean, Shailin, as a gamer girl, I don't know how much you've gamed lately, especially, you know, PC. But I mean, the hardware's there. Right? I mean, the fast chips are there. Intel powers them all. I mean, it's what gamers are buying. Is it just that they're not power efficient enough for the Air and for the MacBook Pros? I mean, is that it? Is it the efficiency piece?
I think it's efficiency piece. And I mean, and those things are just taxing. And I mean, I don't think they're powerful enough for things like the Air, and again, it's been a while since I've gamed on a PC or even actually on a console. But I do think that's part of it. But the ARM processor is plenty powerful already for most gamers. So it's a very interesting sort of development. So,
well, I actually have a personal story. I upgraded, quote unquote, a little more than a year ago to an 11-inch MacBook Air. You know, Core i7 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, things loaded, right? And I'm really happy with the performance of this little machine. It's great. I'll keep it till the warranty runs out or, you know, who knows, right? Till there's a reason to upgrade. I really have no reason. But I was at a customer. I was on site working with a customer, and they had rented a bunch of these HP laptops, ginormous 19-inch things. And, you know, they were quote-unquote budget laptops. And I loaded this thing up, and I happened to load up this Brother Label printer software. We use it on the Mac. It also runs on the PC, and it's great for us in our business. And oh my God, it just screamed. It absolutely screamed. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how is it that this budget PC can be so much faster than my Mac? And, you know, I took a look, and Apple runs these chips, they set the clock speed low so that it doesn't suck up so much power, so that it doesn't create so much heat, so that it doesn't run the fan. And, you know, part of it is just them being persnickety, I guess. But I was amazed at how fast this budget laptop performed some of these same functions that I do on my Mac. Just how much faster it was. It was amazing.
Yeah,
I'm not going to switch, but...
No, I think you hit it on the head, though. It's really about... what's attractive to switching to this, the ARM-based processors is, you know, lower cost, better power management, and, you know, just integration into the whole PC system. And I think what they're saying is that, you know, by moving to the ARM, Apple actually has an opportunity to, you know, move into some of the PC market share. So I think they've kind of maxed out their own ecosystem, and they're starting to look at new markets, I guess.
Well, and once again, they'll be vertically integrated yet again, right? Because they don't manufacture their ARM chips, but they design them. It's all Apple all the time, which brings me to a story I wanted to talk about, because it is very media related, but it's also Apple related. Apple is making the switch over, and they've already begun, according to some sources, to their own CDN. I mean, Craig, and to some extent Shailin, you guys both know that CDNs are these companies you contract with who have all this infrastructure to make our lives easier, whether it be as media companies or marketers or whatever. Mm. Apple goes and builds their own. Really? Who does that? And they're not very good with online services. They're great at content delivery. So like where there's a dollar involved, right? They'll deliver music and they'll deliver movies and videos and so on. And they do a fine job with that. But well, everything else?
But think about who's the new CEO. You know, Tim Cook was the retail guy, and part of retail is customer service and offering services. So it doesn't surprise me. I'm like you, though. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he would go in that direction, but it does surprise me that Apple would devote their resources to that as opposed to continuing down the hardware route.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you feel like you can't get good service from anyone else. Like, I get that, right? Sometimes you got to scratch your own itch because you just don't feel like anyone can do it as well as you can. But you're Apple. You don't do online services very well anyway. So why go there?
They certainly don't. I mean, and maybe that's an area that they're looking to beef up on. I mean, that as an Apple fanboy, I've always been just completely underwhelmed by all of their software suite. Anything, you know, I don't even like, and I want to use them. I want to like them. I don't even use Safari anymore. I mean, but I'm still devoted to the hardware.
Yeah, I'm with you there. They don't do, I mean, Safari I like, but there are just too many Chrome extensions for a lot of the software that I use. And so, you know, I use Chrome as my browser. But Safari's just fine.
So maybe that makes sense, though, if you know, Google is democratizing the PC world and making it more standardized. Maybe it's, you know, Apple can, you know, meet them from the other end and, you know, they can share the whole ecosphere and Microsoft can go away.
Microsoft wow. may go away. All right. Well, I don't know about that. Well, first of all, yeah, the bunch of news there, right? This is something we missed that occurred during the gap. Big layoffs coming at Microsoft. That's going to hurt. Most of them are Nokia employees, which hurts even more. Mm-hmm. But so I forget what the number is. Does anyone remember? It's big. Either way, it's daunting. It's a lot of people that are going to be out of work.
Yeah.
But
it's bloodbath.
They're spending a lot of money on phone commercials.
Yes, they are. Phone commercials and the Surface. It's been estimated that Microsoft has lost $1.7 billion on its... That's just on Surface. That's not Windows Phone. That's nothing else. That is just Surface. Ouch. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to dig themselves out of this. I like Satya Nadella's approach here, but now they've got so much baggage that I'm wondering if they're just going to be weighted down. They won't be able to steer the ship in the direction it needs to go in the time frame that it needs to happen. Craig, did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
Anyway. So I like Windows Phone. It does become a pain in the butt. We're doing... my company is working with a Microsoft conference in a few months. And they always have... and everyone's great, but you do always get these Windows Phone outliers. And they're like, don't you have an app for Windows Phone? I'm like, no. Until Microsoft pays me to build that app or port my app over, it's not happening.
I just have to laugh. What is that commercial with the Windows Phone where they compare it to Siri and
Cortana? Cortana?
Oh, Cortana, yeah.
Montenegro, please.
I haven't seen it. I'm assuming that's a reference. Okay. I haven't seen it.
No, it's just ridiculous to say that, our app is better, so you should buy a Windows Phone instead of an iPhone. It's like, who cares? Go away. You're irrelevant.
You know what, though? Okay. So many competitors are doing this now. Like, what else do they have to hang on to? And frankly, nothing. You're talking about not the early adopters. You're talking about the people who don't necessarily, the laggards who don't know what their next smartphone should be. So they play a lot of these companies, Samsung, Xiaomi, etc., are playing on the very base emotions of people. Have you seen the "Don't be a wall hugger" commercial?
Oh, That was cute, actually.
Well, okay. So they have, but I have a commercial by Samsung. It they do it online and in print and in on billboards and the subway and on TV. So they spend a lot of money in this, and they call Apple iPhone users wall huggers because we're constantly plugging in our phones. Okay, fine. Battery life. So that's your competitive positioning. Battery life. What else you got? I can live with the battery life, right? So that, you know, they're all. So I'm not really sure. So Windows Phone, same thing. We have Cortana, great. That's great. You know, it's not going
to
make me.
And the Cortana pitches. So tell your phone to remind me to buy flowers when I walk by the flower store, and then you know Siri's like, I can't do that. Well, who cares if you can do that? Nobody.
Hey so, now.
But is that some kind of like geo targeting where you, I was trying to think of how it would work.
Well, Siri, like, yeah, Siri does do stuff like that. Like I can tell.
Is it geofencing of some kind or?
Yeah, but right. Generally it's geofencing based on your current location or your known locations. So mm-hmm. I can tell Siri, remind me to pay this bill, you know, remind me to pay the cable bill when I get home. And as soon as I, you know, come within however many meters of the house, Siri pops up, you know, my phone pops up a reminder. Don't forget to pay the cable bill while you're here. Okay, great. And, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bad example, but it's.
No, it's a good example because they probably were like splitting hairs, you know, and said, oh, you can do it this way, but you can do something very similar, but not exactly like that. I don't know. I just feel like they're grasping for straws, you know.
Well, I mean, they are. I mean, Samsung is not the hit it was. Let's see, what do we just see here? I'm finding it.
But I look at Android phones as a viable option. I don't look at Windows phones as a viable option.
Why not?
Just because. I hate everything to do with Microsoft.
But you know what? The only thing I could think of would be the ecosystem, right? I mean, there are no apps on Windows Phone. They totally botched the whole Windows 7 to Windows 8 migration, screwed the whole thing up. But I
associate the whole mobile phone brand with failure.
Ouch.
Yeah.
But serious. Not the company Microsoft, but the mobile phone brand associated with Windows, I associate with one failure after another.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a time when Windows Phone wasn't bad. Not Windows Phone, sorry. Windows Mobile, Charlene.
You remember? I would agree, actually. I mean, you know, in 2005 and 2007, it was a very viable platform. It was competitive against Palm. It certainly was, you know.
Wait, Charlene. Think about what you just said. It was competitive with Palm.
Hey, I'm just saying. I mean, you're saying that it's always associated with failure, and I'm just saying, let's have some history, you know?
Okay.
And been in this business since way back then in mobile, and there was a time when I think, you know, much like what Android is doing today, you know, it set a standard that really brought together a multitude of different hardware manufacturers and gave them, you know, a very powerful platform to do, you know, create really great applications and services on. Now, whether or not that actually came to fruition, you know, and whether or not they built a great ecosystem, I mean, that was, again, that's always been a lesson here, right? If there's one lesson that every company should have learned from mobile is that it's not enough that you built a great platform. It's not enough that you basically built a great hardware. It's that you have to create a great ecosystem. So
well said.
Yes, absolutely. I remember my Moto Q. Do you remember the day I showed up at the office of my Moto Q, Shailen?
Uh-huh. I do indeed. Flashback.
Oh yeah, big flashback. What a long, strange trip it's been. So you know, but it's PCs all over again. It's kind of how I see it. I mean, Samsung. Yep. Samsung has gotten replaced. Let's see, who just upsell? So now, Xiaomi, if that's how it's pronounced.
Xiaomi.
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 Xiaomi. overtakes Samsung in the Chinese market share. Micromax overtakes Samsung in India in Q2. And again, it's like, you know, you've got this base level operating system that anyone can use, and that's the problem, right? There's no differentiating factor, and everybody's competing over price. So at least with Windows Phone, Craig, you know, there's something to be said for making your own devices. And, well, I guess, I don't know. What else?
Come on, I'm waiting to be impressed here.
I don't know. I like the experience. I do. Yeah. I prefer the Windows Phone experience over Android. I do. The user experience. But that still doesn't, that still says nothing for the ecosystem.
You know, honestly, and it's not because I work at Google, folks. I actually prefer the Android system. You know, actually, I probably have a little bit more time on Windows than I have on, you know, Google. I've actually developed applications against the Windows platform. So I as a product, you know, marketing person, not as an actual developer, but it just, I mean, to me, I don't think you're actually 100% correct. I mean, I don't think that the battle between Xiaomi and Samsung and all of those folks is that you're basically battling on price because the system is all identical. Because I think at the end of the day, actually, that's not what's happening. It's that basically that user experience on the Android phone is actually completely differentiated from one phone to another. If you ever picked up a Samsung phone recently and you look at the overlayer that they put on top of the Android system, you'd understand, right? It completely differs from like, you know, HTC, which completely differs from LG, which completely differs from like Xiaomi. And I think the reality is that overlayer of technology and software components bog down the phone. I love my Samsung Note 3, but one of my biggest complaints about this phone personally is that I have to shut down 10,000 apps that pop up and like constantly all the time, like Samsung Health and, you know, a whole bunch of things that I don't use, but I cannot uninstall, right? That's part of the problem.
Sounds like Windows.
It sounds like, I mean, and it is very similar to Windows. I think the very big challenge that some of these companies, what you're seeing in terms of Xiaomi and Samsung and all of these folks is that, what do you want to be good at the end of the day? It's extremely challenging for Samsung to be good at everything. And they're losing because they're fighting multiple fronts in terms of battles. And they're not able to concentrate on fighting any one battle, probably to my sort of, you know, view here, you know, externally is, you know, I don't deal with this on a daily basis. You know, to my mind, what I'm seeing here is that it's hard to fight multiple fronts. I don't run a big business like Samsung, but how do you win in, you know, software overlayer on an OS? How do you win in hardware design? How do you win in tablets? How do you win in a multitude of different battles that you're trying to fight consistently? And they can't focus on any one thing. Xiaomi is very focused on creating the cheapest, most flexible, powerful device that they can. And Samsung used to do that, right? But nowadays they want to, you know, be in the digital content side. They want to do tablets too. And they want to do a lot of really cool, awesome things that I think Samsung could do extremely well. But they are fighting multiple fronts. And I think that's a very hard thing when you've got multiple competitors who are just more nimble because they're just fighting on one.
I can tell you one thing Samsung is not doing well is the smart TVs. My smart TV application, like, yeah, you made me think about it when you talk about all the apps popping up. It's just such a poor user experience. Even though I have it built in to my TV, I'm tempted to go out and buy Apple TV or the Chrome key, whatever that thing is.
Chromecast,
yeah. Just because it's such a poor user experience. And it's free, built into my TV.
Well, and that's one of the reasons. Silent, was it Samsung that bought WebOS?
No, I thought it was HP.
They bought Palm. They bought the remnants of Palm, and then they spun it out as an open source project, but there was some IP related. Anyway, somebody bought WebOS because they want to use it in their TVs. I'm pretty sure it was Samsung. So I think people
know. I think it's LG.
Oh, it might have been LG. Okay.
Yeah. LG buys WebOS from HP for smart TVs, and this was back in, I think, like February or March. Sorry, it took me a little bit to remember that, but yeah.
Well, but see, the thing is here is that it's software-based. It's hardware-based. Craig is not going to go swap his TV for a better experience, right?
The TV is fine. It's just the software package that comes along with it is not ideal.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to our mantra, right? Especially, big things should be dumb and you should power them with the small, smart things. So, I have a dumb TV. I'm very happy with my dumb TV, and I just swap out the small pieces of hardware with it when as they improve. That works fine for me. I don't need a smart TV. Plus, I'm sure my smart TV my dumb TV cost a hell of a lot less than a smart TV. But Craig, you're going to get, they just released an update to Apple TV, not the hardware, but the software.
Okay.
And it looks, this is only a couple of days old now. And, they're picking up on the iOS 7 styling.
Yeah.
And they've released a few other apps, et cetera, et cetera. It's a worthwhile product. We've owned two of them, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a fanboy. So, can I say?
So you think it's worth $100?
Oh, it's so worth $100. Although I don't know. I don't know what the upgrade cycle looks like. Shailen, do you remember? Do you follow that? I forget when they refreshed the Apple TV. I don't think it's before the holidays.
I don't know either. I mean, it could be, though. It would make sense to do it that way.
Yeah, so. I'd poke around online first and find out when the last hardware update was. And depending on that, I would update. Then again, it is only $100. And you can always sell the current model on eBay. Because by the time every new hardware iteration, the hackers will figure out how to break, jailbreak the device, and then the one that you own currently is actually worth more than you can buy, but worth more than the new one that you would buy directly from Apple, because they like to hack them and put on different OSs and everything else. So,
I wondered why that was the case.
I sold mine over the holidays. I bought a new one. I got a new one, new model, refurbed for like $69 on the Apple Store. It was a great deal. And I sold my other one. I put it up on eBay. I don't know. I just pulled some number out of the air based on what I saw things selling for. And I said, I put it up there for $179 or something. Someone bought it in like 2.5 minutes. They were happy to pay that because they knew they could get it and jailbreak it and do whatever they wanted with it. So long story short, upgrade your smart TV with an Apple TV.
I hear you.
That's my recommendation of the day. All right, moving on. Where are we going to go after that? Oh, yes, I know. Groupon stock. Speaking of failures... Groupon stock falls 15% after missing Q2 revenue estimates. That's pretty significant. Craig, this was your story. You just like the train wreck, don't you?
Well, yeah. As quickly as companies rise, they fall even faster. And this is just going to be. It's not going to get better. They're just going to bleed their, until they're gone. I mean, somebody brought it up and said, remember when, you could go and get a massage for, 30% off and you were happy to get it. And it's like, when's the last time you actually went looking for one of those ads before? And it was just kind of like, wow, you're right. Never. Right. Because what happened was everybody, unsubscribe from the email lists because you got tired of getting the emails.
Yep.
And if you don't get the emails, you don't know they exist, which is unfortunate.
Right, because there are apps. There's the Groupon app, but you have to check the app every day, and nobody has that habit.
So I don't see the whole category. I mean, and it's just going to become kind of like a new marketing platform as opposed to this breakthrough category.
Well, I'd say the stock chart on the Mashable article you linked to it looks horrible. It's scary. It looks like, it's not even a long, slow decline. It's a very fast decline.
Because it was a fad. You know, everybody was, signing up for these services. And I was working with an acquisition company, and they said they were getting $50,000 a day in acquisition fees from Groupon, I think it was Groupon or Living Social, I can't remember which one, a day for bringing in new users. I mean, that's pretty healthy. And your marketing budget goes away pretty fast if you're spending, $50,000 a day with one little vendor.
Yeah, but I feel like the whole Groupon in general and Daily Deals in general, the whole thing was just like a Ponzi scheme. I mean, a lot of the vendors didn't feel like they got value. They didn't get repeat customers. They got people who are only shopping on price. And then there's just the whole company side where, there are constantly people taking money off the table until finally, who gets left holding the bag? Like, it's musical chairs. It's like, who gets left at the end? Well, the retail buyer of the stock, basically.
Right.
But both sides.
I actually thought that vendors got, or the customers actually got a pretty good deal because, a lot of my marketing clients, they looked at it. I would rather give a new customer, 50% off on their first meal, for a restaurant, than take that same money and go out and spend it, with an online ad network, right? I'd rather give the customer the benefit than the ad, ad group. So that part I got, it's kind of that whole thing is, are you better off giving discounts like Fresh Directed, instead of running this giant advertising campaign? They ran a smaller advertising campaign and just said $50 off your first order. Right.
Sure.
And they gave that money back to their customers to get them to sample the product because they believed in the product. And so that part of it I bought into, but the hard part is, how do you distribute those deals? And you have to get people to sign up and be loyal for your email list. And that's the hard part.
Well, okay. As Groupon, that's the hard part. And as the company, as the retailer offering the deals, you also need to instill some sort of loyalty, right?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. But who do you pick, right? I mean, the battles, the retailers are left in a situation where do they work with, Groupon? Do you work with Living Social? There was essentially very little differentiation between all of these products. And there were just, it was a race to the bottom because there was no defensible technology there. So, there was nothing there to help the retailer not basically sink into a battle, for the lowest price for their product. And I think this is why local retailers fled.
So then are we saying that the model's bad or that it was too competitive or both or more?
I think that the model was always bad because it built up the wrong incentives, right? It was an incentive basically not built on here's the coolest product, regardless of pricing, that we're surfacing up for you. And so that's helping you preserve a healthy margin. But it's here's the cheapest way you can get access to like the coolest thing. And so then you're basically incentivizing an entire base of customer that all they're doing is breathlessly waiting for the cheapest thing to come up. And so the incentives were never very, very good. And the customer base that you acquire were never one that was meant to be loyal in any way, shape, or form. And so you're basically getting the single worst group of customers. And no offense to anybody who was a Groupon user, a Living Social user, because I mean,
we've all done it. Everybody's tried, like millions of people have tried it.
But that's what you do. You waited for the best deal to come through. And, you know, when it came to using that particular product, I was like a Pavlov's dog. My job was to basically wait for the cheapest product in a similar category. And, so I would go from, one facial fix to the other, but I was always looking for the cheapest facial, not the best facialist.
Right? And you were trained to wait. Right?
Exactly.
That's a good deal, but if I just wait longer, I'll get a better one.
Exactly.
And then after a while, you waited, and then you kind of lost interest and you never went back.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's do this. We've never done this on the show. We have three experienced marketers on this show. How could you improve that? Like, how could you make a better local deals product? Or maybe it shouldn't be deals. Maybe it should be loyalty, or maybe it should be a combination of many incentives. I don't know. How would you make it better?
Well, I can tell you, I worked for the number one deals marketer online, and they're still very successful. That's Travelzoo. They're an example of a company who, did what they do very well and focused on building a very loyal audience. And the challenge is with Travelzoo, they have a very focused audience, right? Mm-hmm. It's travelers looking for deals. They've grown their email lists. I mean, geez, when I was there, it was over 30 million. So it's gotta be, closer to 40 million now. The thing was that they trained those people that they were delivering value. And so even though you may only travel two or three times a year, you still open that email every Wednesday just to look and see, oh my God, there's an $85 ticket to Aruba, and you think about what it would be like to just drop everything and go. So they did a really good job of creating loyalty. And I think that's what you were saying, John, is that was the hardest thing that Groupon was never able to do it. Maybe if you just focus down your categories and pick the most, just stick with maybe just restaurants, right? And become the best restaurant deal provider in your area. I think when you're trying to do everything, it gets diluted.
I agree. I mean, I think one example that we can look at recently is looking at One King's Lane.
Yep.
I mean, it is really focused purely on home goods. It is presented beautifully. Well, the products are basically low price items. You never really know what you're going to get in any one time. And so you really are dedicated to look for high end products. And even if you get a minuscule little discount, you're willing to go for it, but you believe this to be a luxury good as well. It's a higher price margin item. I think the problem with Living Social and Groupon was always that it was running in a business where the products were already had really sharp margins. And so it does not create an opportunity to basically bring a certain sense of value to the customer, right? It's always low price items that you're waiting for lower price on, and it's not very focused. And so it's, there's this weird sense that even if you just got one list that's focused on one thing, there is not a lot of loyalty to things that are just, the cheapest things that you're waiting around for. So, I mean, I anticipate getting One King's Lane every week because it is extremely high end products. And so any tiny bit of value I can get out of it, I'm grateful that they brought that to me because I know the value of the segment. I know how high end it is. And, so I feel like the company is providing me with a tremendous amount of value in negotiations.
But again, because you're dealing with luxury goods, which typically mm-hmm. have a higher price point and which are generally more difficult to get at discount.
Yes. And most importantly, I don't see, you know, while there's price slashing, I don't see, it is, again, not, you get the sense, and it's a messaging that they're doing extremely well, that they brought you this value, right? I think the thing that we never got as a marketer, from a marketing communications point of view, from Groupon and Living Social, was the idea that they had a hand in bringing you this value proposition. It was always that they were facilitating things, but the value proposition was being brought by any one vendor that you don't have any loyalty to. So in a way, it was so easy to switch from Groupon to Living Social and vice versa, and game the system to these companies, because they weren't providing the value, that local vendors were providing the values. Right? With One Kings Lane, with Guilt Group, with all of these companies have actually probably done a little bit better in terms of survival. It's because you felt like this company was basically negotiating on your behalf, bringing you value in the category areas that you're looking at for luxury goods. Yes, of course. And I feel the same way about Travelzoo, right? So
yeah, they definitely, that is their big thing, that they go out and negotiate these deals. And it's in their promises that they give you the 20 best deals on the internet, and you can't get them anywhere else. So you definitely feel like you're benefiting from working with them.
Right. You're saying Travelzoo.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I remember when you telling me, describing that process to me when you were there, the fact that they'll go out and they'll negotiate them on your behalf is pretty amazing. But that's because you are dealing with what? A handful of airlines, a handful of destinations. And so you sort of have that exclusivity, right? They've got the list, and they can say, hey, you know, if you can guarantee this rate, we'll put it in front of our 30 million readers. And the companies would work to actually, the airlines or the hotels or whatever would actually work their butts off to figure out the economics there to present these offers. It's not like... It's not like getting the $30 off of paintball from my that I get from Groupon. Like, I'll never use that. Like, who cares?
Right, right. And the thing is, it doesn't even have to be a huge discount. It just has to be a unique discount to Travelzoo. So, you know, free breakfast, you know, stay two nights, get a third night free. You know, as long as you can't get that somewhere else. You know, that's and people know that going in. And I think really the interesting thing about Travelzoo, and it kind of helped, you know, battle the, you know, we talked about as people being conditioned to wait for a lower price, is going into that, one of the biggest values is, you know, when you got that email, those 20 deals are the best 20 deals on the internet, and you didn't have to shop around. Right, you just took it at face value, and you know it saved a lot of agita, right? And so there was a real confidence builder in the brand, and it was a good experience. And honestly, I think I told you guys, I work for Sports Illustrated, I work for the New York Times, I work for Nickelodeon. I have never worked for a brand where people were so loyal to the brand. I mean, I would see people in airports, so they would see the Travelzoo tag on my bag, like, oh my God, you work for Travelzoo? You know, and they would tell some story about how they got their honeymoon for $6, you know?
Yeah, I think, so yeah, all right, so what am I hearing here? Categories, right? Categories will be one way to fix this. Exclusivity would be one way to fix this kind of business. Guarantees, you know, sort of trust, and all these things that I'm just describing now are sort of kind of the antithesis of the Groupon model. Really, it just hit me, like, just using that language. Just there's nothing there. There's no there, as our friend Guy Chilin would say. There's no there. We'll see. I believe one or two of these companies will probably survive. I don't know if Groupon will be one of them, but we've got Groupon, Living Social, Amazon Local, I think. I'm not exactly sure how that works. There might be a few others, but there'll probably be two that duke it out nationally or internationally, and that'll be it.
Didn't Google start one too? Google Deals or something?
They did. I don't know where that's going, but yeah, I don't know. And Shailen has no idea, because The place is so huge. she's only there 7 weeks. She probably has no idea.
Well, 7 weeks. I don't know anyone, and I'm still trying to figure out where I am. So
I think the concept of online deals isn't going away. And somebody's going to fine tune it and perfect it. And I do think the company that does survive is going to have a valuable asset in terms of platform and a built-in audience. So I think there's still potential for someone down the road, but they really need to kind of start over and fine tune it and come back and do it better in, 5 years.
Oh, well, you're not saying like Groupon should, right? I don't know if they're going to survive that. I mean, they are a public company, but
somebody will. Yeah. I mean, it's maybe, and isn't that kind of what, the Gilt Group has done on a much smaller scale? I think it's closer to what Shailin was talking about in the luxury goods category, but
it's the same, except one, it's, it really is the same in many ways. Yeah. One King's Lane is housewares and decor, and Gilt Group is more fashion oriented. Although they do a lot of other stuff too, but I would say they're very similar in their practices.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they've been successful. I just think Groupon just tried to go too big and too wide and too deep, and they're paying for it.
Yeah, that's an understatement. The stock was like 11 something earlier this year, and now it's, $5 something now. Now's a good time to buy. No kidding. Yeah. Kidding. You didn't get that advice here.
Oh, no.
No. We don't give that kind of advice here. That's not our thing. All right. Where are we going to wrap this week? What's good? What's fun? All right. Not good, not fun, nostalgic. Justin TV. Remember Justin, the guy who used to walk around 24 hours a day with a streaming cam on his head?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say, you guys had to remember. I remember that.
Absolutely.
And then Justin took that bit of fame to, I don't know, some to the valley somewhere, and somebody put money behind him, and he started Justin TV, which basically became a platform for anyone to live stream on the internet. So lo and behold, Justin TV shut down today. People were surprised. They went to the Justin TV homepage, and there was just this FAQ saying, "Where did we go?" and laying it all out there. But what so many people didn't realize is that Twitch, which was the gamers network, Twitch is live streaming for gamers. Twitch was just bought by Google, and I can totally see that. It's a great content brand that would add to their video franchise that works well with Google and so on. Not Google, YouTube, excuse me. So Justin TV finally shut down. Why? Well, if your parent company is owned by Google, which has YouTube, do you really need to compete with yourself? So I just found it very interesting that so many people were just shocked, absolutely shocked, that Justin TV shut down. But it was a grand time in the Web 2.0 days when Justin TV came out. So we will all mourn the loss of Justin TV.
Well, I don't know if you guys had seen Justin TV's incarnation recently, or I saw it a couple years ago, and it was doing a lot of gaming stuff, a lot of gaming videos. And so it's not a total shock to me, but I was taken aback when I first saw. I had a client that ran their advertising and or had an advertising deal with them, and it was nostalgic back then, and they were definitely going in the gaming direction, and it makes perfect sense to focus on Twitch.
My son can't wait to set up his own. Sorry, I was choking on my water. That's not so not good. My son can't wait to set up his own Twitch channel, YouTube channel. From Minecraft.
Wow.
Minecraft.
That's interesting. Wow.
And he he's annoyed with me because the Mac he's using isn't fast enough. I'm like, sorry, get a job. Anyway.
That's the right attitude.
Hey, you want something bad enough, you work for it. How do you think we got here?
Get a PC with an ARM chip.
Yes, there you go. Not going to happen. Oh, he's asking me that all the time. Dad, can we get a PC? No, because I am the family CTO and CIO, and I don't need another platform to mess with now. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Because when everything breaks, who do you call? You got to see when the Wi-Fi goes down. They come in. The two of them, Denise and Jack, come in. My son and his mom come in here just looking at me like pointing at their devices. This isn't working. Well, no shit, it isn't working. Let's check.
I have one daughter and my wife are both asking me, so when is the new Apple phone going to come out? I'm due for an upgrade. Should I wait or should I get, you know, I'm just like, oof.
Well, we have
I hope it comes out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will. We have that in our house, as we all know. We have the hand-me-downs in this house. So Jack is like, Dad, are you going to get the new phone? You should get the new phone, Dad. Well, why should I get the new phone? Because he knows I'm going to give Denise mine, and she's going to give him his, and we're going to sell his on eBay. So he can't wait, right?
Perfect.
All right. It's perfect. All right. That was a meaty. It was a fun, meaty conversation. So let's wrap up tonight. First, I want to tell everyone before we totally wrap up, where can you find the show? Find us on iTunes. When you head on over there, give us a few stars. Tell your friends, leave a review. We'd really appreciate it. It helps get the word out about the show, which we enjoy doing. What else? You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on SoundCloud. So if you want us on mobile and you forgot to download us or subscribe, goodness me, you can grab the SoundCloud app or the Stitcher app and listen on digital media there. When we do produce video, which is usually just not today, because as we were joking before that I just got out of the shower and my hair was all slicked back and I look like, who was it again? Bowser from Sha Na Na. And then I said that to Shailin, and then Shailin and I said, no one's going to know what the hell we're talking about. Anyway.
Yeah.
So when you can find us on YouTube, though. We have a YouTube channel. Of course, you can visit odmcast.com. You can subscribe there. You can watch the videos. You can leave comments. You can participate. Send us questions to comments at odmcast.com. And of course, we'll be sure to read your question on the air, and I should say read and answer your question on the air, if it's appropriate, of course. Until next time, Ms. Shailin Simmons from the Bay Area, if people want to thank you for joining us today, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me all over the web. Just find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Google. You can find me, most importantly, on my website at www.shailinsimmons.com.
Awesome. Thank you. Mr. Calder, where can people thank you, reach out and thank you?
At C. Calder, Craig at craigcalder.com.
Awesome. Of course, I'm John Federico. You can find me all over the interwebs as Gadget Boy, gadgetboy.org, Gadget Boy on Twitter. Reach out, drop me a line. Say hello. So until next time, this has been On Digital Media for, I don't know what the hell today's date is. I do this every week. This is August 5th, 2014. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.